It is wonderful to be with you this morning. It's always a little odd because what's true is in ministry, when you are preaching regularly to a congregation, it becomes a conversation that's ongoing. And a sermon simply is one aspect of that ongoing and rich conversation if it's a good relationship. And guest ministers get plopped down and, you know, sometimes preach the same sermon that got preached the week before without knowing it. And so you're kind to have embraced this experiment of so many guest preachers this year, because we were really hoping to expose you to a wide variety of preaching styles and liturgical styles. So thank you for your patience and your willingness to show up. So I begin now. From the warmth and comfort of our mother's womb, we emerge, taking our first breath through meager cries. I remember so well hearing that cry of a newborn. And we find ourselves as newborns in an unknown world, yanked from the security of the womb of life, whether we are literally yanked or not. That world where every need without us even having to think about was provided for, and the walls, even though we pushed against them, they held us close. And again, all of a sudden, those walls start trying to expel us out of that world. And against our wills, we are thrust into this world, a tiny newborn, ill-prepared for the world which we have just entered. Utterly dependent as we are, we come into the world of brightness and busyness, and if we are among the lucky, we are first held in the arms of love, those kind of arms of love that Jim talked about in the story earlier. And we're still there with a coating of vernix clinging to our skin, and we are provided with our very first blessing, the smile, the radiant smile of another human being. Now, I know as a mother and a recent blessed grandmother that I have held new life in my arms. And in the word of that important sage, Dr. Seuss's Grinch, I felt my heart, which I always thought was pretty large to begin with, grew 10 times larger at the sight of a newborn, my own children and the children of my friends and family. And I know that adoptive parents have the same miraculous experience when meeting their children. We come into this world, in the words of the poet William Wordsworth, trailing clouds of glory. We trail clouds of glory as we come into this world with our divine natures intact, he writes. Later, however, in the very same poem, Wordsworth intimates that that same glory fades into the light of the common day. Oh, if only that divine connection could be easily remembered and retrieved. And my argument today is that is the purpose of our spiritual communities, to remind us that we carry the divine within. If only we could memorize that radiant smile that greeted our entrance into the world. If only it was actually easy to touch the divine seed within, seeing it grow and move through our common days. Have you ever had your spiritual landscape dramatically shift or alter? Have you ever had life circumstances or a revelation shift your understanding so profoundly that your life itself was changed? I'm looking for a response. Thank you. Well, this year, as I often do, traveled with our high school juniors to Mecca, i.e. Boston, and I want to paint a picture for you. Take a moment, if you will, and imagine what the American religious landscape was like in the early 18th century. The prevailing Christian view, the Puritan view, was that, and it came from the Calvinist church, was that the core of humanity was debased and sinful. But in the midst of this religious landscape, there was a group of radicals beginning to question that premise. And they began to talk amongst themselves. What if there is another way to think about humanity? What would it mean? Now, some of these early Unitarians were actually exposed to the precepts of Buddhism and Hinduism via some writing and some scripture, but actually it seems that their thinking emerged out of conversation and in thinking deeply about the practice of living a life of character and a life grounded in moral conscience. And into this debate comes a young and passionate preacher named William Ellery Channing, who begins to preach that every person carries within them a divine presence, and as he later began to call it, a divine seed. Now, this does not seem like radical news to us today. We hear a song like "Everything is Holy Now," and we know, of course, but it was radical news in the 1800s. And we understand, as we hold our first principle of the inherent worth and dignity of every human being, that we are actually acknowledging this essential religious truth. This was radical and it was blasphemous heresy in those days. The less you think that these young, soon to be called Unitarians, were the very first to imagine the concept of the divine within, this thinking has always had its champions in Western thought and, of course, in Eastern thought. And from the writing of the ancient Greek philosophers, who wrote that it was clear, some of them wrote that it was clear that human beings have a touch of the divine within. And one of them asked in a dialogue, "Why are we so blind to our own natures?" But it was William Ellery Channing who brought this idea into the public consciousness of New England and the religious landscape and their religious discourse of America, and who used the idea of human worth as one of the defining differences between the precepts of Unitarianism and the doctrines of Calvinism. Now, what's hard to know, how many of you have gone online and looked at sermons and or listened to them on the podcast or read them, right? Well, in those days, we didn't have the internet, we didn't have access, but what happened is that sermons were published and made into pamphlets every week. And so pamphlets were passed around, and thousands of people heard and tried to collect William Ellery Channing's sermons. And this notion of that humans possessed an indwelling likeness to God was quickly taken up by the public. Most mainline ministers of the time called this likeness to God ideal nothing more than Unitarian heresy and told their people to ignore it. And for his part, Channing realized, actually, that he had a transforming, even salvific idea. And over the next 10 years, he honed and refined his thinking. And later he stated quite boldly that human nature is the image of God. And if that wasn't efficient to get the attention of all of New England, Channing went on to say that the divine image was no respecter of class or circumstances, equally radical in those days, and everyone was included. The landscape had shifted, And the conservative religious preachers took up no time to rail against this unfathomable theology. And I can see that you're actually about as interested as our high school juniors were in this theology. But what I want to say to you is don't go to sleep, my friends. This understanding, the divine seed within, is a foundational understanding of our liberal and progressive faith. We all possess inherent dignity and worth. And we can sometimes recognize this fact intellectually, but we have a hard time accepting it in our hearts. Why are we so blind to our divine natures? Because we're realists. We see the evil all around us. We see the brokenness in our world. We know, actually, that the human heart is divided and possesses the capacity for good and for ill. We are not as optimistic as our religious ancestors. Lord knows that Channing was optimistic, and he tried to live a life, a pure life. I won't go into the details, but he preached the cultivation of the divine within and sought to practice it. And he inspired his parishioners to work in the areas of mental health, public education, abolition, and workers' rights. And they transform social services in New England. And the list could go on, but I won't bore you with those details. I will tell you a story. Our dear colleague, Wendy Williams, minister in Golden, Colorado, told us recently about a story of preaching to her people and telling them a story, a practice of the Bantu in Africa. They have the practice that after their children go to sleep, the adults sing a song to each child. And the song is similar to the song that Jim sang earlier. The song goes something like this. Be who you are. You are a child of the universe. You are the glory of creation itself. Be who you are. Be who you were meant to be. And they sing this to them because they believe that the sleeping soul actually hears these words and instructions more effectively because they are not, those thoughts are not interfered with by negative thinking. And as she told this story to her people, she looked out to her congregation and saw that most of them were weeping. And they were weeping, she thought, out of the human longing to have that song sung to them. And they were weeping for all the children in their lives and in the world who deserve to hear that song and never do, or rarely do. So how do we maintain this aspirational truth when our culture is constantly screaming its bad advice, which treats us as commodities, which tells us over and over again that we are not enough, let alone divine? How do we stay grounded in the reality of our inner beauty when the personalities of celebrities and politicians doing and saying stupid things is what fills our airways? I will say that traveling in cultures where the divine within is accepted as living truth, people are treated differently by strangers and friends alike. People do seem kinder and more open to one another. And I will never forget traveling in India 40 years ago and being so amazed at how people treated one another. And when I returned there last year and found myself, because their greeting is Namaste, which is the God within me salutes the God within you, And I would greet people with great intention. And I was told by one of our guides that namaste really just means hello. But I found actually if I said it with intention, people greeted me back with intention, with openness, and warmth. But this past week, I had a heartbreaking experience. I was told that a youth in our youth group was involved in self-harming behavior, was cutting her legs. This young woman is talented, she's thoughtful, she's lovely physically. I adore her. Now, she is an overachiever and she lives with a great deal of stress. But I was heartbroken, and I was trying to make sense of this, and I went to our religious education director and our youth minister, and they sat down with me and told me that recent studies claim that as many as 50 to 60% of young women in college are involved in some self-destructive or self-harming behavior, and the numbers are rising for males as well. What's going on here? KP Hong, our RE director, says that students report that it releases tension and then they get addicted to that release. Whatever the reason, my heart aches at this sad reality for so many of our young people today. So, as religious liberals, in a world that is constantly screaming its bad advice, am I being overly optimistic to believe that we can make a difference? That our liberal gospel can make a difference? This is spiritually challenging path to own the holy within and move through the world, seeing the holy within others. So the spiritual challenge this morning, my friends, is remember who you are. Remember who you are. It is a demanding spiritual task. It is a task we are up to. Amen.